Welcome back to the Creator Spotlight Podcast. My guest today is musician, creator, and entrepreneur Andrew Southworth. He's been playing music for around 20 years and started making music-focused YouTube videos 16 years ago. He's always kept at it in some way, but he went to college for mechanical engineering and spent 7 years working in that field before quitting his job last year to go full-time on music, his YouTube account, and his various businesses focused on helping people market their own music. But I learned about him through his newsletter, Music Marketing Monday. Andrew, is there anything else to add about who you are and what you do?
Wow, you really did your research. That was amazing.
that's what you got to do.
That's pretty much it in a nutshell. I'm sure I'll dive into more of it as we discuss, but wow, I'm a little shocked.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of information about you out there. You know, wise word to anybody out there, either don't put too much information about yourself out there, or put a lot in case I'm ever interviewing you and then I can read it all.
Next thing you know, you're going to start naming all my dogs and you're going to be like, your wife's name is this.
Oh, well, no, I didn't get that deep. I'm no Tom Cruise Mission Impossible. Okay, so you do a lot of stuff. And it's honestly, as I was researching you, it was a little overwhelming. I had like so many tabs open and I feel like I could have opened like four times that many tabs. But as far as I can tell, like the top level things, YouTube is your main publishing channel. That's where you have the most access to an audience, your largest audience. Genera Studios is like kind of the business umbrella that holds everything you do. And I believe is itself like a specific business. But then within that, things that roll up into it are this blog, Music Growth Machine, a newsletter, Music Marketing Monday, a podcast, Modern Music Marketing, a digital marketing agency called 4Bit Media, a music distribution service called Melodist, and a website and funnel building product called Music Funnels. And there's probably a few I've missed. And then there's also Andrew Southworth, the brand, with all your associated channels, the YouTube, you know, Twitter, your Spotify. And then a few of those businesses I mentioned also have like social media channels and accounts of their own. So just trying to paint the picture of like, you do so much. So is there anything I'm missing from that list? And are any of those projects retired, or is that everything you're doing active?
Yeah. All the ones you mentioned are active. Some of the social media channels associated with them are pretty dormant, but like all the individual like products and companies and services are active of that. I don't know if there's any, I technically have a second podcast for my newsletter, but a lot of weeks I've just not had the time to do it. So I just like basically skip it and do it when I have the time, which
it's
comes and goes.
Months, I noticed.
It's been a couple months. Just because like some weeks I struggle to even get my newsletter out on time. So I was like, the second podcast. I don't need a second podcast as much of anything, but that's in a nutshell.
I don't know if I'd call it a nutshell. that's more than a nutshell. a question there is: there a reason these things aren't more consolidated or like given? Like, I mean, you know, maybe like why the newsletter and the blog and like, I don't know, something, another thing, the podcast don't all have the same name. Yeah. Why do you have so many things?
That's been a constant struggle. The reason is I built all this stuff over time, right? Mm-hmm. And I never had this kind of like grand vision of all the things that would come to be. And in a perfect world, like I'd probably have like, let's say the Genera Studios site and my Music Growth Machine blog would be blog.generastudios.com. And then the newsletter would be like, Music Marketing Monday, Genera Studios, or whatever, right? It'll all be under one brand. It'll be this one cohesive thing. There wouldn't be three blogs. It'd be one. But it's like, man, the amount of work to do that without like actually hurting traffic.
And while keeping the content output going.
Yeah. So right now it's a nightmare. I'd like to prune the garden, but it's just a matter of time and money also. You know?
Do you have, I know when we were emailing, you CC'd your admin. Do you have any other people working with you on all this? Or is it like kind of just you and an admin in this jungle?
Yeah. So up until I think Katie started helping me maybe like 8 to 10 months ago. And before the year 2023, it was me like everything. Depending on how you count people, there's probably 10 to 12 people total, depending on how you count them. Some of them are freelancers, and then we also have a couple part-time people, but we do have several full-time people also on the ad agency side, either doing like customer support role or being ad campaign people where they run campaigns for clients. There's also a few other freelancers. So I have a freelance video editor for YouTube. Mm-hmm. He also cuts my shorts for social media. And then whenever I want a podcast summarized, we have another guy that's a freelancer that does it. And I'm probably forgetting someone, but.
Okay, yeah. So it's not just you though. You've got like a
not just
distributed
me, yeah.
team kind of across all these
and
things.
It used to be, and it was I was kind of hesitant to hire anyone. And so I'd say, like, you know, anyone that's watching this, I would assume a lot of the people that watch or read this are creators looking to learn about being a creator. Hire, like, don't be afraid to start hiring people. Like, if you have the money to justify it, because honestly, hiring my assistant Katie or my admin Katie, we've never actually picked a name for her role, but whatever she wants to be. Yeah, she's like the rock of like my business now.
You know, it's funny you say this, because I've interviewed another, you know, YouTube music guy named Andrew. I interviewed Andrew Huang, if you're familiar with him.
Yeah, freaking love that guy.
Yeah, he rules. It was a great, it was a fun interview. That was when I think I took it from his book, but one of his big pieces of advice was, he was like, oh, I wish that even before I had like upgraded all my gear and got my Euro rack, et cetera, that I had hired somebody to help me out. I wish I had hired people earlier instead of spending that money on gear, and it would have made my life so much better.
Yeah, same. Like, just there's so much stuff that you feel like no one in the world can do as good as you. And then you know, and I thought that for a long time. And then, you know, I hired Katie to help me out with some things, and everything I gave her, she either did just as good as I would do it or better. A lot of cases better. So, you know, obviously you have to interview people and figure out rates, and that's scary. And now someone's relying on you for income, but so worth it. Like, mm-hmm. biggest life. I was so stressed out. And a lot of the music I released around that period, like, if you read the lyrics, they're all like, oh, I feel like I'm drowning, I'm claustrophobic, like, it's like I'm suffocating, you know, and because that's how I felt. Like, I was not only was I still doing everything myself as a creator, but I still was working in engineering. I didn't quit that until August 2023.
Yeah. Well, I guess we started talking a little bit about the revenue percentage breakdowns and such. I'd love to get into that now. So I think the ways that you make money, I believe it's your music itself, courses, consulting, your ad agency, YouTube creator payouts, and software products. Is there anything else, or is that the list?
I don't know. Did you say affiliate stuff in there?
No, I did not. So affiliate.
And then, there's like ad revenue. But yeah.
Okay. So I guess next question then is percentage breakdown. You said that the ad agency is sort of the bread and butter, and then everything. Yeah, how does it break down?
It's kind of like I'd say it's a three-way tie, depending on the month, right? Because like sometimes we'll have a month in the ad agency where we'll make twice as much, just randomly. And same for the courses with the consulting. So it kind of fluctuates month by month. But I'd say the ad agency and the courses and the consulting are roughly like a three-way tie.
Okay.
And then the remainder, so I'd say, you know, not perfect science, but I'd say if out of 100%, each of those, the ad agency, courses, and consulting are probably roughly 20 to 25%
big income. Chunks.
Big chunks. And then the remaining 40 to 25% is, you know, affiliate revenue, ad revenue, music revenue, software services, stuff like that. It fluctuates a lot depending on the month, of course. But also, like, if sponsorships, for example, which is one thing I forgot to mention. A lot of months we won't do any. I'm kind of picky about who I let sponsor, like a YouTube video or anything. But then we'll get another deal for, you know, we might do a couple and we might make like $3,000 or something one month. So it kind of depends. Some months the sponsorships are a little bit bigger chunk, and a lot of times they're zero. So
yeah. I do want to go back though. I want to talk about your YouTube history. So, I'm not like a big YouTube guy. I need to become more of a YouTube guy. We publish this podcast to YouTube, but it's kind of still in the back burner for now. So your history with the channel, you have on there right now, I think 717 videos. I imagine you've had more in the past. The oldest one dates back 16 years, but probably like 17 years because of the way the YouTube dating works. And so I know you started playing guitar when you were 12, and then you started posting to YouTube 16, 17 years ago. So you were, it was probably about four years after you started playing music, you start posting to YouTube about it. And it's like,
yeah,
little bits of like you like figuring out a chord, or, you know, like doing these, you start doing these covers a little later. It evolves. Anyways, first question here. Why were you posting to YouTube? What had drawn you to post to YouTube? What did that do for you?
Yeah, it was very much, I mean, everyone now kind of looks at YouTube as this place you go to become a creator, mm-hmm. become an influencer and make money or whatever.
But this is like 2008 then, and you're like 16 or something like that. It's
2008. I'm 60. I'm a stupid teenager, right? And I just think YouTube wasn't this thing you could even make a business.
It was brand new.
Right? It was this silly platform you upload fun videos on. And I just thought it was the coolest thing ever. Because this was when like E-Bomb's World and like Claymation stuff was out, right? Like it was very much a different landscape.
People were still in MySpace.
People were still in MySpace. And it was just this fun platform that you like shared a thing with the world. And I don't know, something about that, like, I don't know, just something was like so captivating about that to me. And I'd always been kind of interested in the idea of having like a website too. Mm-hmm. It's a similar thing, people finding your stuff and consuming it. So YouTube just felt good. And I also, when I was 16, I was just doing stupid videos for fun, pretty much. But at some point I realized, like, I feel like back then, if you went up to a stranger and said, have you seen this thing on YouTube? Most people would say, what's YouTube, right? They'd be like, oh, I saw Google Video, because Google Video was big, but what's YouTube? And I thought that YouTube was going to be this huge thing that everyone ended up knowing. And I was like, I want to like make videos on this because I feel like it's just too cool. Like this is amazing that anyone can upload anything and anyone can watch it in the world. And so at some point I started trying to make videos because I felt like it was a good long-term bet to establish a presence on YouTube. But it all started off just like, this is a fun thing, right?
Yeah.
And I guess I was right.
Yeah. I want to talk about like you kept posting videos over the years. And your second most viewed video ever is from about 5 years after you started. So 11 years ago, it's Music Theory Lesson, Modes 101.
Is that my second most popular video now?
Your second most popular. Anymore? We'll get into the first most popular one in a little bit, but your second most popular one. I think it has 399,000 views. Did that go viral at the time or more recently?
It was, I mean, I don't know if it's ever gone viral, but like, well, for me, yeah,
400,000 views.
It kind of was. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It, like for like a channel my size, that's pretty much viral. And that was not at the time, but not now. It was like somewhere in the middle, like maybe a year or two after I posted that video, I noticed it was just crushing it in views and getting a ton of search traffic.
What was that like?
It was kind of surreal. It was also kind of weird because I wasn't really making videos like that, like other music theory videos. I think I tried to replicate that video by doing like essentially a follow-up to it, and then none of it ever took off,
because you were doing at the time it was mostly like Marilyn Manson covers, Tool covers, guides on how to scream, sing, that kind of thing, right?
Yeah And so it was super cool, right? Because this, I believe that was all in this first kind of like 5 year period where I'm doing like, I'm kind of going back and forth between guitar instructions and music theory and vocal and screaming lessons. And I remember just being so excited when all that was happening. Like I think that was happening when I was working at Starbucks when I was in college.
Because it was 2013 or so that
was posted. Yeah, I would have been in college, undergrad, and working at Starbucks then. And I was living with my mom then still too. And I remember coming home and like my mom wouldn't be coming home from work until like certain hour. And so I'd be like, okay, let's record some screaming lessons. Right. So, you know, cause I'm just upstairs in my office, just like screaming my head off. Right. And I don't really want to do that when there's other people home.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was surreal. Just growing online. Like it's kind of like, you know, again, now you kind of understand it because everyone knows about all these algorithms. Yeah. But back then, it's like, how are people finding this? Like, how does this work?
Because that was actually pre-YouTube, like full YouTube algorithm. That was still when it was more like search-based and like recommendations based on view count and stuff. And that's obviously something somebody would search on YouTube. Like, how do I learn music theory? And your video pops up.
Yeah. I wasn't even uploading custom thumbnails at that point. Mm-hmm. Like, the thumbnail was just whatever YouTube picked in the middle of the video back then.
Yeah.
My titles would be so literal, like music theory 101 modes breakdown, right? Like, I would never make it. You could never do a title like that anymore. Like, every title is going to be like, you know, the secret music theory hack that helps you write better music, modes 101, right? It would be something ridiculous like that. And the thumbnail would be the super contrasty, bright color. I'd be in the corner just like, you know, doing like a shocked face, and there'd be this modes thing, you know.
It's- well, wait, so speaking of one of these videos, your most viewed video is from the end of 2022, and it's Spotify Wrapped is really cool this year.
And
it's like, you're breaking, it's, I think it has 405,000 views right now, so just a few thousand more than the other one. And what's interesting about this isn't necessarily that this specifically, what I want to talk about isn't just that this is your most viewed video. It's that you tried it again 1 year later, exact same concept, exact same title, but for Spotify Wrapped 2023. And that one got, you know, only 15,000 views. So my question there is, like, I don't know if you have any, like, you know, tinfoil hat theories on why the one did so much better than the other, but then also like how repetition plays into your work on YouTube and like testing things that worked before, and do they often work or do they not? But yeah, that was a lot. First, do you have any, you know, theories about why that one didn't work, but the first one did?
That first one got a lot of views. And I remember thinking at the time, like, what is happening? Like, why is this video doing so good? But then after a couple days, like a couple weeks, you know, it's still doing good. I'm like, this is great, like, view-wise, but it's not, I don't see any increase in, like, sales or courses or consultations or ad agency
subscribers, maybe even.
Subscribers, there was a good amount of growth.
Yeah.
But also the comments were like way more brutal. Like, that was the first video. That was one of the first videos I had that, like,
which is what happens when you get that viral reach outside of your audience who knows you.
It felt like YouTube, like maybe it was the way that I recorded this video, but it felt like YouTube's interpretation of the video was that it wasn't for music artists. It was for people who use Spotify as a consumer.
Yes.
And so they pushed it out to all these people who like Spotify, but they're not music artists. So they're kind of this more like general public kind of thing who have the expectation of like Mr. Beast level quality. So I get so many comments that were like, you know, your audio sucks, your video sucks. I'm just like, what the hell, man? Like, I've never had anyone complain about my audio or video in years.
Yeah.
Really, almost never. And like in the same week on the same video, I have like 10 people complaining about my audio and video. So I was like, these comments are like really brutal. Also, a lot of people like just disagreeing more than like, I'm fine with disagreeing with people, but this was just way more. Like, so it was more drama. It wasn't making me any more money, but it was giving me more subscribers. But I was like, I feel like these subscribers, they're not gonna stick around. Yeah. Cause if they're not music artists, like, my channel isn't really valuable to them, you know? So I remember at the time I was thinking, should I try to make more videos in line like this and broaden my horizons a bit? And I decided not to, because I was like, this isn't like, it's not going to help me. My bottom line, it's not going to help me like reach the people.
You don't need to serve the music consumer. You serve the musician.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I basically purposefully made my next video as like deep into the music artist perspective as possible, just so that like any of those people would be weeded out. Like, if you're not here for that, like, just unsubscribe. Like, I don't want you if you're not the right person for my channel. You know, I don't want that data like messing up YouTube's interpretation of what my channel is. So when I made the video the next year, I very much was like, let's just try to do what I did before, but maybe make it more clear from the get-go that we're talking about things from an artist perspective, and like, who is my channel for, actually? Yeah. And maybe that's why I didn't do as well, but also like, I didn't have, it didn't feel like it was the wrong audience anymore. So,
yeah, you know, well, so it actually was like ultimately a lesson in like consolidating your audience and who your audience is.
Yeah.
Real quick, I would like to talk about the newsletter, because this is ostensibly a newsletter and podcast.
Yeah.
So you were describing a little bit why you started it earlier. Basically, like, you're always looking for, you know, new things to do. You saw Beehive. You're like, this looks cool. It will make my life easier. So I'm going to start it. So I'm curious if there's, if anything beyond that, what does it, like, what does it do for you that any other project you work on doesn't do for you? Like, what, whether that's on a functional level or like a personal creative level, what does the newsletter do for you that's unique among your projects?
Well, one the original kind of selling point of Beehive specifically was that I could have a newsletter and blog. And
yeah.
Because newsletters, if you do them right, they take a good amount of time, each one.
Mine certainly does.
Yeah, like you want to make it, when I think of a newsletter compared to like an email marketing blast, like an email marketing blast is usually short, straight to the point, gives some people an offer. Mm-hmm. When I think of a newsletter, it's like each newsletter should be as valuable as a blog post. It should have some chunk of information that people can walk away with. So because of that, it takes time. And if it just exists in that moment where it gets sent to those people and you never get any value out of it for the rest of your life, unless you re-email it later, that's kind of a waste.
Yeah.
I think I was literally looking for, you know, online platform to publish newsletter, also to blog. And then eventually I came across Beehive and I was like, oh, this is like surprisingly cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I was like, at the time I had, I think, 7,000 people on my list.
Oh, wow.
And for that, it was like, I don't know, $87 a month paid annually or something for up to 100,000 subscribers. I think the pricing's changed a bit over time.
Changed,
and there's still a new model that rolled out. It's still way cheaper than my, I technically still have Drip. I also pay for Drip, which I really should just cancel.
You got to prune your garden, man.
Yeah, because I'm paying $220 a month for Drip right now. And I really never send emails through it anymore. I just use Beehive for all my emails.
So yeah.
I got to prune the garden.
Well, anyways, speaking of how lush and overgrown the garden is, how about the stats? What, how many subscribers? What open rate? What click rate?
The active subscribers, 10,438. Open rate is 51%, which is actually down by 10% this month. I don't know why. But click rate is 3%. So yeah,
nice.
10,400, 51% open rate, 3% click rate, which I feel like is
pretty
super
good.
That
is good.
Yeah, like a 50% open rate, I'm pretty proud of, because I don't think I had that with all my emails on Drip. With this newsletter, like I think the consistency of it, the fact that it's every week, and that it's so focused on like the value of each post and not being this like marketing newsletter thing.
Yeah, no, I was clicking through some of them, and it's like each one offers like a brief lesson or like an update on like a situation in like Spotify bot scams or whatever it might be that week. And then there's like some new videos you've posted, et cetera. In the dream world, how do you make this a sustainable, happy business that you can then do for the rest of your life? What does that look like? Are you already there?
Yeah. I mean, over the past year, I've hired a bunch of people. And that has been like the best thing, because I was working quite literally 80 hours a week for multiple years in a row, whether it was like the engineering job and my online businesses. And then eventually I quit. But then it was just like online businesses, me working crazy hours, and then because I didn't want to hire people to do things. So now it's like, if you were to look at like this month compared to maybe a random month a year ago, I'm probably profiting less. I'm almost definitely profiting less, but I'm also not working 80 hours a week, which I'm super glad about, because I was just getting so burnt out after doing so many years of it. And I was like, there's no way this is sustainable. And so I make plenty of money. I don't need to work 80 hours a week. I can hire that out and still have like a great, more than enough income to have everything that I want and be happy. So it's still a little crazy. Like some weeks get overwhelming and things you go wrong, and then I'm working crazy hours. But for the most part, it's a lot more stable now. Like I feel like the things I'm doing now, I could do forever, and I'm happy doing them. But that being said, you know, I'm always looking for how can I grow and scale things. And so we do have some, you know, secret projects we're working on that I'm hiring people to help do and all that stuff. So
no, that's a good answer.
What I'm doing now, I do feel like I could do forever, but I probably just over time, as the business grows, just like keep finding ways that I can buy my time back by hiring someone.
Yeah.
And there's actually a really good book about that. I think it's literally called like Buy Back Your Time, but super good read. The guy talks about how he got so addicted to hiring people to do stuff that they have like a home assistant, like a person who works at their home 40 hours a week, who like brings him like a smoothie every day at 4 o'clock. And I'm like, okay, that's crazy.
That's a little much,
but that's a little extra. I don't think I'm that fancy. You know, it's that kind of thing. Over time, you can buy back your time, and your time is the only thing you can't replace.
That's the point. Yeah. Two more very brief questions. One, if that's kind of your dream and all that, what keeps you up at night? What's your biggest worry or weakness across your whole operation?
Ooh. I'd say the biggest worry is like any of these platforms going away. You know, like it's not too much of a risk now, but like I feel for the people who have built their business on TikTok.
Yeah.
Yeah. That live in the US at least, that their whole thing might be taken away soon. So I'm sure they're panicking, just trying to pull people over to other platforms and grow newsletters and all that jazz just so they retain their audience. But since I have like a pretty big list.
And you're pretty well diversified.
I have a pretty big following on all these platforms. Like I feel pretty safe, but there is always like, I'm always kind of worried like, well, what if, you know, what if AI content creation becomes so mainstream in 5 years that the markets like YouTube's flooded with just crap or just AI generated fluff.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, I don't know. Right. I have no idea what's going to happen, but I'll figure it out.
People stand out.
Yeah. I feel like real people stand out. And so, that, you know, every so often I'll go through like little paranoia phases. And as I said, I'm very like conservative financially. Like before I quit my job, I saved up 2 years of income.
Yeah.
But I'm even more conservative with like that diversification. I don't even trust to put all my money in one bank. I have 5 savings accounts, and I even just evenly distribute my savings across them because I'm like, you know, like last week I heard about some YouTuber bank that like some middleware provider like went bankrupt, and like the bank didn't go bankrupt, the middleware provider did, so no one can take out their money. And since the bank didn't go bankrupt, it's not FDIC insured. So these people could lose all their money. So I see that. And I'm like, oh, I'm glad I have 5 savings accounts, right? Because all 5 aren't going to go under. And then I do the same thing for my content. I'm like, well, I feel like YouTube's going great right now. How can I have my blog do even better? And I'm like, okay, the blog's doing well. How can I make the Instagram do better? Just because like I'm always paranoid, like who knows when one thing's going to disappear. Yeah. And this whole creator thing, it's kind of known to not be like a long term, like people come and go, right? So I'm always just trying to diversify so that if the worst thing should happen, it won't be that bad.
I was going to ask you what your advice is to other creators, but I feel like you kind of just answered that question. Diversify
as much, like don't have one income source, don't have one social media platform, don't have one of anything, ideally. Like if you rely on this, and honestly, like even if you work in a day job and you have a career, like there's all these layoffs that happen. So honestly, even if you have a job that you think is stable, start a side hustle. Like just have something else that you have, because you know, it just sucks being reliant on one thing. And if that one thing goes away, it's like your whole world kind of falls down until you figure out what to do next. But if you're so diversified that like I could have like 2 of the core pillars of my business get pulled out from under me and I'd still be fine.
Because you've got like 6 pillars.
That's because I've got like 6 pillars and I've saved up 2 years of mortgage payments. And that's just kind of how I am. I don't like the feeling that, and some people do this, you know, they quit their job with no savings and they want to do music full time and they have no plan. And that's a whole thing people do. You know, like you're never going to perform better than when your life depends on it.
True.
Right. But that's just not for me. I can't handle that level of stress. Maybe when I was 22, but not at 32.
Yeah. Perfect. I guess we'll leave it there. Where should people go to find you?
Yeah. If you look up Andrew Southworth online, or you know, andrewsouthworth.com, you can find all my links to my various products and my YouTube channel and stuff on there. But also Andrew Southworth on YouTube, musicmarketingmonday.com for the newsletter, if you want to see how I've built out my beehive stack, so to speak. Thanks so much for having me on, man.
Yeah, cool. Well, this has been the Creator Spotlight Podcast. Our guest today has once again been Andrew Southworth, the creator of Generous Studios and the Music Marketing Monday newsletter. I have been your host, Francis Zier. And if you've made it this far, it would mean a lot if you rated us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. I'll see you next week.